At this time, Dr. Jeffrey and Mrs. Robert Russon will unveil the statue.
From our vantage point here at the Jeep and behind the huge statue of Lincoln, why, we can see now what the trouble is. The silver cord had been pulled to take the sheeting from around the head of Lincoln, but somehow it's gotten entangled up on the figure itself. And there are three men up there now trying to get the ropes freed, so that the parachute, the silken chute that they're using as a cover for the bust of Lincoln, will drop to the ground, thus completing the unveiling. We're noticing, too, that while all this is going on, Mr. McGee, Senator McGee, is stepping toward the podium, so we assume that he will be making his talk now. Yes, he's coming up there, so we'll go back to the other mic, the microphone that we have set up on the podium.
Up to the south, to the front range of the Rockies, to the Raywar Peaks to the southwest, and as you come up to the snowy range directly to our west, you gather in the magnificence of God's towering statues in geology. And yet, when you travel close up to those peaks, when you're at their base, Their real stature seems lost upon you. It is only when you acquire the perspective of distance and height that their power and their intensity encroaches upon you. And this is exactly what has happened to Abraham Lincoln in history. As we have receded from his historic moment in the past, and have acquired the perspective of time and the judgment, the deep judgment of experience, Lincoln has grown and still grows in the eyes of all men. The why is so easy to understand because the reasons are so basically simple. Lincoln was great, first because of his sagacity, his deep ingrained wisdom. At a moment when our nation was in turmoil, when it was sorely divided, it was Lincoln who had the power and the knowledge to cut to the quick of the question, to drive immediately to the core, as he so eloquently did when he said that no nation can exist half slave and half free. He was the first statesman to so clearly define the issue. Once it was defined and the crisis was met, Lincoln became the very first to assume moderation and caution and understanding. He became no fiery abolitionist. He became no vengeful despot. designing upon the destruction of his opponents. He never once proposed to abolish all slavery now. He only sought to contain it, and then to let time and the pressures of human judgment erode upon what was left of it. And this parallel of Lincoln suggests to me in this moment of our own time, again, our guideline. Once more, we're locked in a struggle in which the basic question is freedom, in which the central definition of that freedom has already been made. And now the time has come when we must not, dare not heed to those who tell us that in world communism we find the kind of foe that can be destroyed only in war. We have learned long since in the nuclear age that there is no victor in modern warfare. But once we know the issue, once we have acquired the confidence of the cause and are inspired by the penetrating strengths of the truth, we then proceed with the eroding processes of truth, of democracy, of freedom, to make inroads on the facade that is world communism. Lincoln was wise. His wisdom can become our wisdom. Secondly, Lincoln was magnanimous. His magnanimity was his most lovable, warming, stirring personal characteristic. He was humble before God. And when there were those who said to Mr. Lincoln, "Let's get God on our side," in the Civil War, he always cautioned them, "Gentlemen, God is almighty, all-powerful. I know not which side he has chosen. I only pray that I'm on God's side." And this, too, it is well for us to remember and to recall that Lincoln had in his heart and his soul the spirit of forgiveness. The second inaugural address of Abraham Lincoln is one of the great state papers of our rich history. That second inaugural address has become one of the charters of freedom around the world. And in that inaugural, it was Lincoln who was the first to forgive the South, the recent enemy. When there were those who came to Lincoln in his own cabinet and said, "We must get Jeff Davis and hang him to the nearest tree," Jeff Davis being the president of the Confederate States that had just been defeated, Lincoln warned them again when he said to them, "Gentlemen, judge not, lest ye be judged." And when there were those who said to Lincoln, "Mr. Lincoln, remember, these people to the South are our enemies. They killed our brothers. They killed our husbands, our fathers, our sons, all of our loved ones. They are the enemy." That same depth that you see in Lincoln's eyes, the depth of human understanding, brought his response to those who would prod Lincoln into revenge. And he always had the reply for them as he said, "Gentlemen, you say these people were our enemies. Do I not destroy our enemies when I make them our friends?" This is the depth of love, of human dignity, that so characterized Abraham Lincoln. But perhaps even more than Lincoln's wisdom, his sagacity, even more than his magnanimity, was his intense love of the common people and his dedication to the cause of free democracy. He once said, you know, the plain people are so wonderful, and God loves them. He must, for he made so many of them. It was Lincoln who said, you can fool all of the people some of the time, some of the people all of the time, but never all of the people all of the time, because he had his faith in the real soundness of judgment and the goodness of reason of the common man. It was Lincoln who, in his Gettysburg Address, reminded us that government of the people, by the people, and for the people shall not perish from this earth. Lincoln, coupled with this love and dedication to people's government, a perspective of history not always commanded by statesmen in government. He was fond of saying that we cannot escape history, but he was also quick to say that we must neither be shackled by it. And the quotation on the front of this monument reflected the real dynamism of Lincoln's philosophy of history. He said the dead dogma of the past should not restrain us nor hold us back from tackling the turmoil of the present. And thus we must think anew and act anew. And it's in this philosophy of Lincoln that we find the architecture for America today and tomorrow. For it's here that we can mine a wealth of ideas for which the world is in search at this moment. The world knows Lincoln, just as Mr. Khrushchev was mindful of Lincoln's place in human history. In Tokyo this last summer, the high school students voted Abraham Lincoln the greatest leader in the world. We remember historically that the great leader of modern China, Dr. Sun Yat-sen, found his three principles in Lincoln's Gettysburg Address. And down in Jakarta, in Indonesia, when the Japanese had been driven out at the end of World War II, and our troops had gone in, they found inscribed on the bombed-out walls of that once-proud capital the quotations from Abraham Lincoln, moving the people thousands upon thousands of miles removed from the center of Lincoln's birth. Mr. Nehru in India, first of all, points to that hand, the molded hand of Abraham Lincoln, that rests on his own desk. It's that hand of Lincoln that to Nehru has been an inspiration of strength, a molder of far-seeing policy. And it's in India this month where the Lincoln Society is dedicating a new Lincoln Library. An American traveler to the north of India visited with a Caucasian tribal chieftain whose first question to this American traveler was, tell me about that greatest leader in the world who in his moment of military victory forgave his enemy. It was Tolstoy the Russian who once said that of all of the great leaders of free government, Abraham Lincoln was the only giant. It is in Africa today where new peoples, winning independence and dignity, universally point to Abraham Lincoln as their common figure of inspiration. And so it is from the China Sea to India, to Africa, to Russia. a message from Lincoln, an understanding about Lincoln, an inspiration that guides their public conduct. And this becomes America's great opportunity at this moment, when all of the world is in throes of revolution, when upheaval sweeps across the dark continent of Africa, across the vast reaches of Asia. We're groping for a way in which we can fire the imagination of those people, that we might attract their cause and associate it with ours. This is not a communist revolution, my friends, that has stirred these people. This is a revolution of people who are grasping for dignity, for personality. They're seeking independence. They're seeking status. They seek freedom. And while we have great strength in our military, while we have great wealth in our resources, these, my friends, are not the way in which we're going to inspire and to bring together these diverse forces on the loose around this globe. We must match them and meet them with ideas, for this is indeed has become a struggle for the minds of men. And what greater thrill than to attract and to promote and to join with these people in the philosophy of Abraham Lincoln, whom they already understand, who already has inspired them, who already has excited them to the causes that we ourselves hold most dear to our country. This is America's great opportunity. Lincoln becomes the great teacher for all. And with that, may I suggest a prayerful thought, paraphrased from the prayer of the chaplain of the Senate of the United States, Dr. Frederick Brown Harris, when he said, God our Father, send us forth into these troubled, fearful, wonderful times with sagacity, magnanimity, love for people and free government, like thy servant, Abraham Lincoln. And like Abraham Lincoln, help us to be true to the truth, which the world denies, not tongue-tied by its gilded lies, not always right in all men's eyes, but ever faithful to the light within.